Hello and welcome to episode 62 of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movie podcast where we talk all things movies. And this week, we're here to review the newest installment in Hollywood's most consistent action franchise, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Hot take.
Is that, I mean, I don't feel
I don't
like that's
think
a,
it's
hot
a hot take.
I think that's a pretty calm, lukewarm take.
Okay.
It has one mediocre entry and the rest are good.
It's like that person who puts like pepper on their salad.
Pepper?
And is like, ooh. Yeah, they put pepper on the salad. And
salt.
They're like, ooh, that's spicy.
And pepper.
Are we talking about
We talking about Peppa Pig?
I was going Peppa Pig.
And you can tell who has kids. There we go.
I went with the John Mulaney stand-up.
Look out.
Yeah. There we go. All right. First, we have a quick update for our summer box office bet. A couple news items to get to. Nominations for the 16th class of honorable mentions. And as always, we'll end with our content of the week. My name is Cameron Slanina, and contrary to what my co-host wanted to do, I have not been voted off the island. I had a hidden immunity idol, which I kept it in my back pocket.
Immunity, man.
So I played
that.
Yeah, immunity. It'll get you.
Better. The worst part of this is that we don't get to meet Jeff Probst.
Mm. Yeah. Luckily, I'm joined by my co-host Jake Brown and Trevor Allison. So
good to be here, man.
Guys, it's wonderful to be back.
Yeah, good to have the band back together.
Yeah, band is back together for this week, and I like it. It's good. But we got an update for a summer box office wager bet thing that we do. In the past couple of weeks, so we did this at the beginning of July. Now that we're heading into August, and there's a month left in the competition, I figured it'd be good for us to get things kind of squared away to where we can have an idea of how things sit going into that last month. There's been a couple. We've each had a film come out over the past 2 months, or over the past month. Trevor had Mission Impossible come out this weekend. Jake had Skyscraper and Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, come out. And then I had Hotel Transylvania 3. So the standings have stayed the same. Jake is in third with $800 million. Trevor is in second with $996 million. And I am in first with $1,188 million. But okay, so I was looking at this today because I kind of got curious about a couple things. Jake, you are the only person who has films that have not met their budget. So Solo, A Star Wars Story, made $212 million domestically on a $275 million budget. And then Skyscraper made $60 million on a $125 million budget.
Sweet. You know, good
so
to be Jake.
Even, here's the thing, though, is if Solo had just made what Rogue One made, which is like $520 million, you would be very close behind me in second place. And then if Skyscraper had just made its budget back, you would be in first place.
Dang, Lord and Miller.
Man.
Yeah.
I can't believe that Fallout did not make more money after the insane hype.
Movie Pass,
well,
bro.
What cracked me up
movie
about
pass.
This movie.
Yeah, Movie Pass is a big thing. That movie fact, and we're going to talk about that in just a sec, but Movie Pass not offering it, they said could have cost it around like $10 to $20 million.
And somehow Money Pass can't monetize that power.
Had to, yeah, but it's it cracked me up because this weekend there was this huge article about it made more money than any other Mission Impossible movie, and that was like the headline. And I was like, wow, it probably made like $150 million. And I looked at it, and it said $61 million. And I was like,
wow,
oh, dang, these movies do not translate well at the domestic box office. But yeah, that's kind of a segue into our first news item, which is that Movie Pass is dead. Or at least being buried, we are watching it be buried. Over the weekend, or I think last week on Thursday, they had to take out another loan or something for $6.2 million because they ran out of funds to reimburse tickets. And as a result of that, multiple theaters have taken MoviePass off as an accepted form of payment because they're worried about not getting paid back for their tickets. So now MoviePass is only offered in about 3% of theaters, mostly just ones that do e-ticketing online. And as of this week, I think on Tuesday, they came out with changes where MoviePass is now going to only let you see movies that have been out for longer than 2 weeks or movies that aren't big blockbusters And get this, you're going to pay $5 more for it. So you will now be paying $14.95. Sounds like a great business plan, right, guys?
Yeah, this is like the scene in The Office where it's like your prices are putting you out of business. No, our prices are the only thing keeping us in business. That's 100% what this is. You know, they were too cheap for what they were trying to do, which is why everybody joined, but it wasn't sustainable and they weren't able to monetize it fast enough for it to then be sustainable.
I have a slightly different theory.
Oh.
And I think their problem is that not enough people joined.
Oh, so you really do think this is the Ryan Howard thing where it's like their prices are good, but they need more people on a long-term scale.
Right, right. If more people joined, then you have more control over movie theaters, like we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. I think the problem was that they didn't have sufficient either data or sway over their members in order to make any money from theaters and or studios.
So are you guys going to stick with MoviePass? Or I mean, Jake, just based on our text, you've already switched to AMC, right?
Yeah, so AMC does $20 a month. You get 3 movies a week. You can get the tickets whenever you want. You can reserve your seat. And yeah, I mean, it's $20 a month. It's a little bit more expensive, but it's the theater chain itself. I live right next to an AMC theater. So I went ahead and switched this week as MoviePass seemed to be dying. And honestly, it's great. Like, I got to schedule when I wanted to see the movie from my house like 3 days in advance, and it put it on my calendar. And I walked up and I just scanned my phone and they were like, "Welcome, A-list member." And like,
hey-o.
They like rolled out the red carpet for me. I felt like a fancy little VIP.
Yeah.
But I do think that AMC's membership isn't as effective at killing MoviePass as a lot of people speculated it was going to be. I think like right now they have maybe like 500,000 members potentially, which is a lot.
I think they have 125,000 over 3 months.
That's pretty good. That's great.
Yeah.
But it's not,
I think that they'll get even more.
MoviePass had.
Yeah, I think they'll get even more as MoviePass slowly dies.
Yeah, for me, This makes MoviePass only appeal to like that small segment of people who see like every movie in theaters.
Yeah.
I think that there is a target audience for that, but I don't think it's very big. For me, I'm dropping MoviePass. I'm up in the air about the AMC thing. My closest theater is an AMC. I have another one that's not. The problem is, and I say problem, like it's not actually a problem, but here in Waco, to go to a matinee, it only cost me $6. Mm-hmm. So
how much does
I have
an
to
IMAX
go to,
cost?
I don't know. I've never even been to one because it costs so much. 11, 12.
That's what
that's the
intrigues
thing.
Me about. That's why I'm excited about
right.
The AMC thing is like you can see movies multiple times. So you could see the new Star Wars in 3D and IMAX and in regular all in the same week. And you like just boom, reserve it right in the app, which is like for $20 a month. And I'm freelancing now, so I have a little bit more flexibility in my schedule on slower weeks. So if I want to catch up on movies, you can see all 3 movies in one day if you want. It's not it's 3 movies a week on your schedule. And
so yeah, so I think yeah, the IMAX thing is kind of the difference maker for me. Because for it to be worth it outside of IMAX, I have to go to 4 movies a month, which is you know what I do most months, but not all of them. So.
Right.
I'm leaning towards the AMC, but haven't made my final decision yet.
Can you use your AMC pass? Like, Jake, if you and your wife wanted to go see a movie, could you use 2 of your week passes on that?
I don't know.
Or does she have to have her own?
I think she might have to have her own, but okay. That's a good question. I might try. Because
that would
and
be a real
that.
Game changer right there.
Could you buy a ticket to a different movie with a similar screening time?
Probably. I don't think
what
anybody
are we, in
is.
High school?
I don't know. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, it's just a weird move. I wish the AMC that's by me isn't great, and so I'm not going to switch over. The theaters that I mostly go to are Cinemarks, and their thing is a joke, so I'm not...
Oh, it's so dumb. It shouldn't even exist.
Yeah, it's really bad.
You basically pay money for a discount on concessions.
Yes. And you get a buddy pass each month, a discounted rate.
Well,
it's
hey.
A joke.
Well,
it's a joke. Okay. I'm a loner. I don't go see movies with people. I just like myself and my time to me. So But yeah, so MoviePass is dead. That's unfortunate. For the year that it lasted, it was a fun ride. And it will be fondly remembered.
I mean, in the words of lots of people on Twitter, I love that a bunch of venture capitalists just set money on fire so a bunch of us can see cheap movies.
Yep. But the funny thing is they haven't even
thank
sold.
Thank you to all of those people.
They haven't, like, the whole thing was set up around the fact that if they were able to get enough people, they would get enough data, and it was all about data mining. They could sell data, and that's how they would fund the business. And they haven't sold the data. So my question is, like, one, are people interested in the data? Or two, why are they waiting to sell the data, and how much is it worth?
I don't know. But I'm definitely going to buy a MoviePass t-shirt now because I think you can wear it ironically and it'd be pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all we have for that. The Star Wars 9 cast was revealed this week, and there wasn't anything too shocking other than the fact that they added, or not added, but have confirmed that both Mark Hamill and Billy Dee Williams will be in the film. Billy Dee Williams, famous for the role of Lando Calrissian. And then as well, Carrie Fisher will be in the movie, which, as many of you know, she passed away in January of 2017 before the, or yeah, 2017 before the film had come out. And they have said that they are going to use previous unseen footage of her to have her reprise a small role in this movie. Right? Star Wars news? Are you guys excited about Carrie Fisher coming back, or were you kind of good with how she left the series?
I mean, I kind of assumed they were going to do something because they didn't give her character like the clean end that all the other legacy characters have had. I just hope that they don't do it in a way that feels forced of like, well, we have this footage of her, so this would be convenient. And so then we're going to do this story arc because of this 6 second thing of footage we have of Carrie Fisher. You know, that's concerning. And also, I just really hope they don't do any of like the 3D old stuff. Like, I don't know. This is basically the same news, and it's just like, oh, and by the way, we have clips of Carrie Fisher that we might throw in there. So it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, there's two sides to this coin for me. One is I'm a little nervous about the Carrie Fisher thing, and what does that footage look like? How is it going to fit in? But the other side of it is J.J. Abrams. and I think that if, especially if it's footage that he shot, I think that he can find a way to work it in and make it work.
In right. J.J. and we also, trust.
Yeah.
So Jake, he did say that they would not do any CGI or face mapping or anything
good
like that with her.
Good.
He refuses to do that because of the character and the person. But yeah, I think, we talked about this. J.J. gives you what you want, but also makes it good. And I think that this is right up his alley for things that he can do well.
J.J. Abrams was in the third class of honorable mentions.
Boom. There you go.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. My bad. I didn't mean to cause such an uproar. One thing that gives me happiness about the whole Carrie Fisher thing is that her daughter, who's also an actress, Billie Lourd, she's been in episode 7 and 8. JJ has talked at length with her, and they have worked out a way together of how to honor Carrie Fisher. So that's the part that I'm like, okay, look, if her daughter has signed off on it, it's a good sign. It's probably worthwhile and will actually serve the movie and not just be a way to bring meet people in by the, how are they going to work Carrie Fisher into this movie? Type of stick. So somewhat related, because of Andy Serkis, his first directorial movie that has now taken years to put out, his second movie that he directed is already out. It's called Breathe with Andrew Garfield that came out last year. He directed that after he directed Mowgli, but Mowgli has just had so many CGI problems that it's just now about to be released, except for the fact that it's not going to be released and is being bought by Netflix to be put on their subscription sometime in 2019. It was going to be released in October of this year and slated as a darker jungle version take, and now it's on Netflix. It's such a weird turn. Did you guys, like, is this something that, like, screams good news for you guys? Or, I think it's good for Netflix, but it probably means bad things about the movie, right?
I was like intrigued by this movie when the trailer came out. I thought it looks like something kind of cool and interesting. Maybe a little bit truer to the source material than the delightful romp that the Jungle Book is. But yeah, this is not good. Although, I mean, this happened with the Cloverfield Paradox, which ended up being awful. And then it also sort of happened with Annihilation, which is one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. So I don't completely know what to do with this news.
I think with Annihilation, it's such a small indie film that makes more sense. Like Netflix is where Annihilation is going to really succeed, or HBO. I feel like that's the kind of film that HBO would release. Mowgli is something that comes out in the summer and kids eat it up, and it like kills at the box office, even if it's not good. And so this is kind of weird and concerning. I wasn't huge on the trailer. I'm kind of like, really? Another jungle? This is becoming the Robin Hood of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like, again, really?
Yeah.
And so I wasn't super excited about it, especially considering how fantastic Jon Favreau's version is. But this I feel like is Netflix having too much money and wanting to just hoard as much content as possible, and Andy Serkis wanting to make a buck off of something that sounds like it's not going so well.
Yeah, it makes me, if anything, it makes me worried. Andy Serkis is a mensch. We've all stated that we're huge fans of his work. He's arguably one of the most influential actors working today just based off of his use of CGI. That being said, a darker take of the Jungle Book story is not something that sounds appealing to the people that a Jungle Book story would be appealing to. Mm-hmm. Like, no parent out there is going to be like, ooh, a more darker, grittier take of the movie that came out a couple years ago? Gee golly, let's go see it. That's not, like, no parent's thinking that. And so
I feel like the target audience for this film is English teachers.
Yeah, it makes sense for them to dump it off to Netflix. I'm curious how much of this starts happening. If there's a movie that people are, you know, it's testing kind of off and people are like, look, it's a good movie. There's just not a market for it. Like it was kind of with Annihilation. Like Annihilation's a fantastic movie, but it didn't do great at the box office. So I wonder if this is like a future model that starts happening. Movie studios get nervous about a movie not being released, not, you know, doing well in theaters. And so they dump it off to Netflix. And what seems even more likely is with Disney's about to have their own subscription service. So if Disney gets cold feet about something, oh, we'll just toss it on our subscription service. No harm to us. Speaking of Disney, the Disney and Fox shareholders have officially approved the $73.1 billion deal for Disney to acquire 20th Century Fox. And so it is seeming more and more official, like Disney will acquire the rights to 20th Century Fox Studios. It's hard for me to know because I feel like I'm stuck in this bubble of like the film community as far as who I follow on Twitter and whatnot. And so it's hard for me to know like how big of a deal is this. This seems like a massive, like a once in a lifetime massive corporate merger type deal. Is it like, do you guys, is it coming off that way or is it kind of, does it not seem, it's kind of like, oh
yeah.
Disney doing Disney.
I cannot believe that the government hasn't stepped in yet and declared monopoly, especially with how much stuff that's been going on with like Time Warner and Comcast and all that stuff. Like this is insane. The only people here that win is Disney and Fox. Everyone else, including us, the movie lover, movie watcher, we're the losers here, because that means that like Disney, one single company, is now basically going to be responsible for 70% of the big films that are coming out in theaters. And Fox was the studio that had a lot of money and a lot of sway and was willing to take chances and take risks and make films that Disney wasn't. Look at Deadpool. Look at Logan. Like, those are iconic characters that Disney would never touch. But Fox was like, you know what? We'll do it. And then Fox also has incredible, like, Fox Searchlight. They've got a lot of, like, fantastic indie films coming out. Competition breeds innovation, and it breeds quality. And so, you know, it's it's exciting to think about, like, oh wow, Marvel and X-Men and Fox, and like, oh, this is so exciting. But it also is kind of a huge bummer. Yeah, I'm not happy about it. I'm against it. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Like you said, Cameron, we've never seen anything like this before. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I can't believe that this is happening.
Yes. I mean, I agree with all of that. My hope is that Disney will maybe keep a lot of the names, and so that they can kind of distance those non-Disney kind of things from the Disney brand, because there's definitely money in those things, and the people that run Disney are not idiots.
But like, look what happened with like the James Gunn thing. Like, I know we talked about this last week, and once again, we are not saying that what James Gunn did was right or good or any of that. But like, Disney has rules because it is Disney. Like, Fox might have examined the situation a little bit more closely and said, you know what, we're going to weigh this and we're going to think about it. Whereas Disney is just like, nope, we have these rules. You're gone. We're a family friendly business. And like I said, nothing wrong with that. Like, Disney has the right to do that. What James Gunn did was stupid. But like, if that's the company that's making all of our entertainment decisions, like the entertainment field has just drastically changed.
And the other question is, will FX still have the movies?
Oh my goodness. Oh man.
That was a good one.
Oh, that's so well done. Wow. Incredible, Trevor. We're going to end the podcast there. That's all we have for tonight.
They're only actually going to have all of the Disney Channel original movies. So it's just going to be like Brink, Xeon, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's just a 24-hour marathon of Johnny Tsunami playing over and over again.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. The weird thought for me is, would Disney ever take a chance on a movie like Annihilation or Blade Runner 2049? Like, does them having all this sway and having all this money and having all this success lead them to create a smaller sub company that then puts out these experimental or different films that they're able to do because they have all this money? Or is it just Disney going, we have money, keep making money, keep making money, keep making money? Funny enough, one of the more, and my hope in that, my thought is that they will be more adventurous. I mean, look at the Star Wars film that they just put out. That's probably one of the more risk-taking movies, big budget or not big budget, that I've seen in a long time. Like, they did a lot of things in that movie that seem very casual, but are a huge deal and obviously very controversial. And so I think with them putting that out, I think that they are willing to take chances if the right thing is there. And that's what gives me hope, is that, okay, maybe they see that things like Deadpool or Logan, there's a place for those kind of films, and they do their own thing with those. I don't know. Call me optimistic. Let's go ahead and get to the 16th class of honorable mentions. Honorable mentions is a segment that we do here on the show time to time, and it's a way for us to honor and recognize people in this industry who are above and beyond everybody else within the film industry. We're each going to nominate somebody, and then what's going to happen is we're going to have a discussion on that person. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to figure out is, if we knew nothing about a movie other than that this person was involved in the movie, would we go see it solely based on that? So if all we knew about a movie was that somebody like Paul Rudd was involved with that movie, Paul Rudd's acting in it, is that enough to make you want to go see the movie? Just based, you don't know the plot, you don't know the director, you haven't seen any trailers or posters. All you know is Paul Rudd's going to be on screen for an hour and a half. Is that enough to make you go see it? In order for somebody to be inducted into the honorable mentions, it must be a unanimous vote between all three of us. And in order for them to be nominated, they must have been in or worked on more than five films. In the last segment that we did, in episode 59, we inducted Brad Bird, Paul Rudd, and James Cameron, arguably my proudest thing that I've done since being on this podcast, convincing Jake and Trevor to let the great James Cameron into the honorable mentions.
We're not happy about it.
Ugh.
Okay. That's good to know. Let's go ahead and get to the 16th.
Can't wait to see Avatar 2 in IMAX 3D with my AMC A-list
in 2020. Version.
And James Cameron is going to rake in that cache.
Very excited.
So let's go ahead and nominate the 16th class of honorable mentions. Trevor, why don't you go ahead and get us kicked off?
Okay, mine is someone who is just having a heck of a year. And she's kind of relatively new to me, but I've just been constantly impressed with what she's been doing.
All right, Amy Schumer, here we go.
She's got, what is it, 2015? She's got some upcoming stuff that I'm super excited about, and she's made me interested in looking back at a lot of the other things that she's in, and that is the great Tessa Thompson.
Ooh. Okay, I'll be the downer. I'll be the downer. I love Tessa Thompson. I think she is one of the brightest up-and-coming actresses right now. Would I go see a movie strictly because of Tessa Thompson? No.
You haven't seen Sorry to Bother You.
I haven't, but I have seen Annihilation, and I have seen Thor Ragnarok, and Creed's one of my favorite movies from 2015. I feel like I have a pretty decent grasp on where she's at in her career. Now, I would gladly say that she's an honorary mensch as somebody that I love, somebody who I like when she's on screen, I'm blown away by her talent. But if all I knew about a movie, like if all you said is, hey, Cam, do you want to go see this movie? And I said, oh, what's it about? Oh, Tessa Thompson's in it. I'm not going to go see a movie just because of that. She, at least for me, she doesn't have that sway right now.
Hmm. Okay.
Jake, would you have said yes?
I think I would have put a pending until I saw Creed 2.
But see, she's not like, and here's my issue with that is that she's once again a side character in Creed 2.
Yeah.
Like I would have, if I was going to put a pending on it, I would have to put a pending until the new Men in Black film comes out.
That's a good point.
She could be in that kind of, I would concede that she could be in that like Alice and Janney category.
Yeah. I think she's in that like Alice and Janney thing where it's like, look, I love Alice and Janney. I will go to bat for how great Alice and Janney is.
Oh, but would you?
I'm not going to.
Would you though, Cameron?
Yes, I would, Jake, because there's a difference between being good and being a mensch.
No, I agree with you. Like Tessa Thompson is like, I mean, I agree with you guys. She is by far one of the best up and coming and promising talents in Hollywood, but we haven't seen her carry a movie yet, and I think that's really what it takes to be an honorable mensch. Not only do you have to all those other things, but being a great character actor is an art in itself. Being able to carry a movie, I mean, that's something that very, very few people have. So once we see her do that, she's absolutely in.
Okay.
All right, so we'll put a pending on Tessa Thompson. And in the meantime, she will stay honorary. So Jake, who is your...
Trevor, though, respect. Respect on, you know, taking a leap. Love it. Keep it up. My person is the king of 80s and action movies and Scientology. It's Tom Cruise.
I don't know if that's a thing that you want to be king of. Hey, I'm Tom Cruise. I'm king of Scientology.
Also the king of Oprah's couch.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Nobody has ever owned a couch as much as Tom Cruise.
I know, Jake, you always talk about this. There aren't a lot of like super legit movie stars left. It's just not the way the kind of system works anymore. But, and I will say, I did not see Mission Impossible Fallout. I wasn't able to this weekend. But to be doing what he's doing and it's still working at his age, at how many times he's done it, is incredibly impressive. No one maybe picks roles as well as Tom Cruise over the course of his career, and no one delivers in those roles by running as fast as he can like Tom Cruise.
How old do you think Tom Cruise is?
58.
I believe he's like 56.
He's 56.
55?
Okay.
And he did 106 Halo skydive jumps in a row for Mission Impossible with a broken ankle.
You think that's impressive?
I got off the couch 3 times today.
I got up to go to the bathroom.
I think if there's anyone who is like a cyborg created to be in action movies, it might be him. He may not be human.
I don't think he's human whatsoever. I think that he is an alien creature.
So the only thing that it makes me hesitant whatsoever is I had no interest in seeing The Mummy because it looked awful.
But the only reason that you had any interest was because of Tom Cruise.
Sure, sure. That's also fair. That's also fair. So
wait,
yes,
we're
of
saying
course,
Tom Cruise, right? The musician, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, just want to make sure.
That's right. He's Tom freaking Cruise. He's Maverick. He's Ethan Hunt. I mean, he's Cole Trickle in Days of Thunder, a movie that makes NASCAR look awesome. I don't even like NASCAR.
I love that you just brought up Cole Trickle as a way of trying to convince us about Tom Cruise's greatness. That's not a great...
Guys, Days of Thunder is awesome. So, yes, Tom Cruise, of course.
Yeah, I'm in on the Tom Cruise train. Not a big fan of the whole Scientology thing, but outside of that, I think the guy is great in movies. I don't think that there's anybody that has what?
I think he's great in movies. I like the way that you said it. I completely agree.
I think he's great in movies. I mean, for him at his age, like he went through a rough patch for a while there where he did like Lions for Lambs. And Trevor, no offense, Valkyrie's not great.
No, I agree. I don't think it's very good either.
Night and Day's not great. And then like there's like a 5-year period in between Mission Impossible 3 and Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol where really the only good thing that he did was Tropic Thunder, and that was a cameo and maybe his best acting performance to date.
Mm-hmm.
That being said,
I love that he did Rock of Ages because he could.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like the only reason he did it.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, he did Edge of Tomorrow recently, which is great. I will say that I didn't have any interest in going to see American Made, which came out last year.
That movie was amazing.
Is it really?
I thought it looked awesome.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I thought it looked awesome.
I like it because I love that kind of movie, but the trailer was fantastic.
Well, I will say either way, I'll say yes on Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
He's a great actor. He's very talented. I wish he would kind of go back to more serious non-actiony stuff every once in a while, because what's that movie, what's the Paul Magnolia, like Magnolia's great, A Few Good Men's great,
A Few Good Men is iconic for a lot of reasons,
right?
But I mean, his character is the I want the truth, you can't handle the truth, like that might be the greatest two lines given back and forth in any film,
right,
between him and Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, 100% in on Tom Cruise. That's he's a worthy mensch. I'm going to go with an outside pick. I had a couple of ones that I felt would be in. I'm just going to, you know, say people like Samuel L. Jackson or John Bernthal, who I could have thrown out there and gotten an easy win. But I wanted to take a chance, be a little risky here. This is a guy who is maybe one of my favorite TV roles of all time. And whenever he kind of pops up in a movie, he's not necessarily the lead, but he is somebody who owns whatever scene he's in. And if there's an indie movie and I see him in the trailer and I know, like, look, he's in 20 minutes of that movie and that's it, I'm still going to go see it because he is enough to bring me to the theater. And he is none other than the man, the myth, the legend, Ron Swanson, Nick Offerman.
Absolutely. I'm so sorry I just used that word.
Yeah, I don't know that I've seen anything with Nick Offerman besides Parks and Rec.
22 Jump Street, 21
Jump
Street.
That's enough, though. But like
Parks and Rec, sure. Parks and Rec is one of my holy trinity of sitcoms, and he is one of the great characters in it. I mean, they're all great. Whatever.
The other two are Big Bang Theory and How I Met Your Mother.
Yes, yeah. It's my only non-CBS pantheon sitcom.
Oh my god!
All right.
Oh man.
To avoid that, I feel like I need to correct that slander. They are, of course, Seinfeld and The Office, but whatever.
Okay. Amen. Preach that holy trinity all day.
Michael Gary Scott.
So yeah, I'm kind of scrolling through. I think I've only seen him in Parks and Rec.
Okay, so let me just throw this out there.
He was
in a movie
fine.
this
he's,
year called Heart Beats Loud, or Hearts Beat Loud, which is fantastic. Yeah,
which I would see if it would, you know, come play in a theater near me.
Right. He was in The Founder, and he was great in The Founder.
Yeah.
He was in Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, which he was great in. He was great in 22 Jump Street. He was great in, what's that movie? Kings of Summer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are you saying
I'm
yes?
I'm on board. I love Nick Offerman. I'm super excited for that new show with him and Amy Poehler.
Yeah.
Where people are making things. And it seems so positive, like the Great British Baking Show. Finally, we're getting like an American version.
Yes.
I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, that premiered last night, and you can go watch that now on Hulu. I'm probably going to check that out. Oh, and he's also in Bad Times at the El Royale, which comes out later this year.
Oh, excited for that. Yeah. I have no idea what it is, but I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
If it's anything like Cabin in the Woods, I'm 100% on board.
Man, he has been in so much stuff.
Yeah, he's done a lot of voice acting too.
I'm a huge Nick Offerman fan. I think I agree with you, Cameron. Like his role as Ron Swanson should be enough to let him in, because that's one of the most iconic TV characters ever, I think. But yeah, like the amount of work he does in little indie films, and he's such a good character actor. And his relationship with his wife is also next level with yes. Megan Mullally.
They're funny.
Yeah. So of course it's Nick Offerman. It's Ron freaking Swanson.
Nick Offerman, Tom Cruise, welcome to the honorable mentions. Tessa Thompson, we love you, and we are very much looking forward to Men in Black next year, where we will officially hopefully welcome you into the club. So that's all we have for the 16th class of honorable mentions. Let's go ahead and get to our review of Mission Impossible Fallout. All right, so Mission Impossible put out a new movie, and I made a statement earlier in this podcast that this is the most consistent action franchise. I'm beginning to really feel like, you know how when movie reviews come out, you're always like, oh, is it good? Is it good? Is it good? I'm really beginning to feel like Mission Impossible is just that series that's just going to be good. Like, with the cast they have, the talent that they've got behind the camera, this is just going to be one of those things that you can almost bank on to just be good for years and years and years, as long as they kind of keep pushing it like they have been. That being said, Mission Impossible 2 is not great. I like the first one, but Mission Impossible 2 is not great. J.J. Abrams did a great job kind of rebooting things with 3. Brad Bird did a great job on 4. And obviously McQuarrie has done a great job in Rogue Nation. What's your thought on the previous Mission Impossible movies?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I actually don't know if I've ever seen the first one. Sorry. Yeah. I remember seeing the second one and being like, these are terrible. And then I saw the third one randomly. I think I like rented it from Blockbuster or something. And
ooh, Blockbuster.
Right? Throwback. And I was like, holy cow, this is amazing. I love the third one. And I've seen all of them since. And I agree with you, man. These are just so fun. They're so different. These are what I feel like the Pierce Brosnan James Bond movies were trying to be. Like the gadgets and the action and the storylines, and it's Tom Cruise like running at full speed all the time. They're just so fun, so lighthearted. Like,
yeah.
Weirdly kind of lighthearted.
Like, this is exactly what I want my summer blockbuster to be.
Absolutely. Like I'm totally fine with like big action explosions, high stakes, if it's fun and if it's doing it well, and if the story makes sense, and if the characters are fun and there's good character development, good acting. Like, I want movies like that. Like, when we bash the summer blockbusters, we're bashing things like Transformers because they're terrible. They're lacking everything except for the budget and the visuals. Whereas, like, these movies have so much entertainment value that, I love the Mission Impossible movies. I weirdly think that they're very forgettable.
Like, oh, I don't think so at all. Like,
really?
the action scene, so specifically the fourth one, that action scene on the Burj Khalif has stuck with me for like years. Like, I get vertigo thinking about that scene.
What I mean by that is like the plot oftentimes. Oh. Like, the stunts are incredibly memorable. I will I'll never forget the stunt work that Tom Cruise does in these movies. They're insane.
Yeah. And we should say, like, let's go ahead and get this out there now. If you don't already know, Tom Cruise does most of the, like, in the fifth one, when you see him hanging on to the outside of a giant cargo plane, that's actually Tom Cruise on the outside of a giant cargo plane, like, yeah, tethered to it, yeah, but he's on the outside of a plane as it takes off and flies around for a while. Like,
and
he's actually on the outside of the Burj Khalifa.
And the super long, like, one take of him holding his breath for like 6 minutes, he actually did that. Like, Tom Cruise is insane, guys. We're just, he's a minch, but he's insane. He believes in Scientology, and he is willing to put his body in incredibly harmful situations for your entertainment. So just respect that, please. I mean, like, the stunt work that he does, he's 56. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But the plots are oftentimes very forgettable. Like, I forgot who the girl character was in this film. Like, she...
Rebecca Ferguson?
Yeah, it was like Rebecca Ferguson's on screen, and it was a moment with Tom Cruise of being like, and I was like, who's that? And I've seen all of them. Like,
yeah.
So it's been a while since I've seen any of them. So, like, I guess that's on me. But also, like, if it's not Tom Cruise or Simon Pegg or Ving Rhames, like, I'm generally, or his wife, I remember his wife's character. Okay, I'm generally, like, unaware of who that person is. Alec Baldwin in a suit, you can assume government. Safe to assume.
No Jeremy Renner, unfortunately.
No Jeremy Renner in this one. I forgot he had the other ones.
He had the option to do a cameo. They didn't write him in because they thought he'd be filming Avengers. And then he had such a bad time filming the fifth one, supposedly, that when McQuarrie offered him a cameo, he turned it down and said, no, I don't want to. I think they were going to kill him off in the first scene, which actually, coincidentally enough, would have, like, thrown off a bunch of the messages later on in the movie. But kind of getting into this movie, Jake, what you just said about plot, I actually think is correct for the most part. Like, what I remember at most of the Mission Impossible films is the action scenes. Like, when I think of the fifth one, I think of the plane, the opera house action scene, which is one of the greatest action scenes ever. The motorcycle stunt chase, the underwater. Like, I don't really remember the back and forth between him and Sean Harris's villain. I don't really remember that.
I will say, though, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character stuck with me. That performance was, I think that's the best performance of the series besides Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I'll give you that. All that being said, I actually love the plot and the storyline of this movie and the way that they weave certain things in to how, like, it affects certain elements of the story. Like, one of the opening scenes is this guy being, okay, well, spoilers. We're going to get into spoilers on Mission Impossible Fallout. If you haven't seen it, go, please go see it. Obviously, a lot of people didn't go see it. It's well worth your time. It's one of the most fun times that you'll have at the box office this year. It's lighthearted. You don't need to, like, prepare yourself for something heavy. It's a lot of fun, and it's well worth your time.
Yeah, I'm just to hop on that, like, this is by far top 10 so far of the year, maybe even top five. Most fun I've had in the theater. Fantastic film. Go see this movie.
That being said, like, one of the opening scenes is this guy in a bed, and they show, like, Wolf Blitzer footage of nuclear fallout in Rome, at the Vatican, Jerusalem, and Mecca, and convince this guy that these three nuclear bombs went off, only to have it be revealed that they're on a stage and Wolf Blitzer is, like, a masked version of Benji. And it's one of, like, the way that they work the Fallout stuff into this is fantastic. It's so well done. And this movie, more than any other movie, weaves together so much heart. Like, the whole part of, like, there's this whole storyline of, like, Tom Cruise, the CIA is worried about him because at the end of the day, is he going to choose to save the millions of lives or the one life of the person that he's closest to? And that comes into effect really big in the end of the movie when he goes to, where does he go?
Kashmir.
I almost said Kazakhstan. I'm going to be talking about Borat. Kashmir, when he goes there and it's revealed that his wife, who has been in hiding for years, is actually doing doctoral work in this like camp that they're at. And so then it's the whole idea of like, well, is he going to save her or is he going to try and save a third of the world's population? And it's like, there are little, like, I think this movie more than any other Mission Impossible movie weaves heart into this so much more than any other thing. And I think that's very much a Christopher McQuarrie touchstone, who wrote and directed the movie.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think this movie does a really good job of having character development. A lot of times characters in these films become secondary to the stunts. And I mean, we've already talked about that. Like, the plot is like surprisingly like complicated and weaved together and really strong, but it often falls in terms of like memorability to like second or third tier compared to what else is happening in the film. This one, not so much. I mean, the plot in this film is really strong. The character development in this film is really strong. Every performance is really strong. And yeah, I mean, this is, I think, easily one of the best of the series in that realm for sure. Specifically character development, plot, story, heart.
Yeah, I said it wasn't heavy earlier, but there's a moment in the middle of this movie that's a total like mind warp of like what this Ethan Hunt character could be if he was a bad guy. The scene where it's like he's envisioning how the police ambush goes if he follows through with the villain's plan.
Yeah.
And it's like that scene where it's just following, and you know, like, he has a mask on, but you know it's Tom Cruise, and it's just like, what is he? Is he a bad guy now? And they may really make you think that it's a real thing and not like some vision that he's having to like a what could happen. And that's a real mind trip type moment. You know, the first thing that you're going to talk about in any of these Mission Impossible movies is the action scenes. Jake, you already mentioned he did 106 halo jumps from 25,000 feet in order to film that action sequence, which is just nuts. It's beyond anything that anybody else is doing nowadays. I mean, the only thing that you can compare is like, I don't even know. Like, Dwayne Johnson doesn't even do his own stunts. He does
his cousin. He does like the pretty boy parts for him.
Yeah. His cousin or somebody that he's close to who's also massive does them. And so it's like between the halo jump, the car motorcycle chase, the helicopter scene, the bathroom fight scene, like this film is just like thick with really great scenes. You know, the bathroom fight scene where now the like iconic Henry Cavill moment of him, as people have started calling it, him reloading his arms as he goes into fight.
That's amazing.
That scene's intense. And at first you're like, oh, it's two guys versus like this other guy that looks smaller than both of them. Like, they're going to whoop him. And it just goes south so quick. And it really makes me believe that it's like that. It's that age old question of like, okay, if Ethan Hunt fought James Bond and Jason Bourne, who would win? And I'm fully on team like Jason Bourne would kick both of them in an actual like fist fight. In a stunt scene, yeah, Ethan Hunt's going to win. That's great. But Jason Bourne would destroy in an actual like hand-to-hand fight.
That's
scene.
A debate we need to have with Trevor on the podcast.
Really? Do you think that's a debate? Like, I thought that's a clear cut.
I think it would be okay. James Bond would quickly be taken out, and then Ethan Hunt and Jason Bourne would have a fight. Who? I think Jason Bourne would win, but I think it'd be closer than you think it would be. But anyways.
Okay. Let's have that conversation. So which of these scenes were you most impressed with of these fight scenes, or action scenes, I should say?
I think the most impressive is the amount of halo jumps that they did, just because of like the amount of work and time and preparation and like safety that goes into something like a halo jump is pretty intense. Like, there are very, very few people in the world that are qualified to do halo jumps. And the fact that he did over 100 of them for this film, like within a span of like maybe a couple weeks, is insane. I think what's fantastic about these movies is when you watch them, they're able to do these long, close-up, full-speed action takes where you can fully see Tom Cruise's face like on the motorcycle or in the bathroom fight scene. No other series or movie star does that. Like, no one else gives you the ability to do that. It gives you the ability to shoot with total flexibility of well, we can get an insert shot here. We can put a GoPro on the motorcycle. It doesn't matter because Tom Cruise is doing it. Also going to give a huge shout out to Henry Cavill on this. Apparently he did a lot of his own stunts as well. They both did a fantastic job.
Like nobody else is going to jump from one building to another, break their ankle and just go, okay, well, I have a broken ankle. What other stunts can we do while I'm mending
and
on this?
And he finished
like,
the scene.
Oh, let's jump out of it.
Like that.
Right. Like, and that's the scene that they actually use is like him like with his broken
getting
ankle.
Up and running out of the scene with a broken ankle.
Right.
They're all impressive. The bathroom fight scene for me was pretty, that was really good fight choreography. And then also the car motorcycle chase, that was insane. Like they were going so fast.
And then like the him parkour jumping.
Yeah. That whole scene was incredible. Crazy. And just Tom Cruise is, he's just the best. I know he's like kind of crazy and kind of a jerk, but like what he does for our entertainment is just ridiculous.
The Halo jump scene, when the lightning hits, I audibly gasped. It's like one of the very few times in a movie that has gotten a like visceral reaction from me. It's like that and Gwen Stacy's death in Spider-Man 2. Like those are the two moments. And this was something that's like, it happened. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was like the way that they did it, where it's like all this noise, very loud, very heavy. And then this like crackle and it just goes silent it was incredible. It was incredibly well done. It kind of gave me like flashbacks to the Holdo maneuver from Star Wars Episode 8, which it's like, okay, maybe one of my favorite things in movies is, you know, cutting out the audio in the middle of a scene. Maybe that's my thing. Maybe I just love that. What did you think of, well, we've already talked about him a little bit, but Henry the Mustache Cavill.
Oh, man.
Was he... I thought he did fantastic in this.
Yeah. I mean, I think his character wasn't super interesting. Like, that's a pretty straightforward, stereotypical character to play. But, you know, he does it in a really interesting way. And I think you mentioned it earlier on the podcast, but I 100% agree. Henry Cavill, I think, is one of the most... underused actors in Hollywood in terms of talent and quality of performance that you're going to get out of somebody compared to the roles that he's given. He is definitely much more than just a pretty face and a pretty body too, huh?
Oh, wow. All right, we went
there. The dude is, like, he's ripped.
The dude's
it's
jacked.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's fine.
But... yeah, I think he did an incredible job of standing toe to toe with Tom Cruise and also being so hateable. Like he does such a good job in this film of like
that mustache does a lot for him.
The like his performance, really, you hate him, and that's a good performance for that kind of character. And it's not like a straightforward like you're gonna hate me. It's just the way that he plays it is. So good. His mustache is really good too. You know, it's a good mustache.
His mustache in this movie made me understand. Like for a while, I was like, man, he really just couldn't shave it for Mission Impossible when he went to go do Justice League reshoots. And then I saw this, and I was like, you know, I get it. I get it. That's a good mustache.
So this is
I get it.
So much better than Justice League.
Yeah, it's really frustrating to me that the two things that Henry Cavill is going to be known for are Batman versus Superman and Justice League, when it's like he's great in Man from U.N.C.L.E. and he's great in this.
Yeah.
And I wish he got more credit for those. And you know what? I'll go ahead and say it. I like Man of Steel. It's got some terrible plot holes, but it's an overall fun movie. Like I had fun
it's
with that.
It's the second best DC Universe film out there.
Oof. That's not a really big compliment to give.
But it's kind of a compliment, though. So,
all right, you ready though? The returning cast I thought was great here: Tom Cruise, Rebecca Ferguson, Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames. I love Sean Harris in this role. Like, I'm fine if Sean Harris just wants to come back every film as Solomon Lane and be a devious bad guy. I'm great with that.
Yeah.
Spoiler: Alec Baldwin dying was a really sad moment because I thought he was great in these movies.
I agree.
And then you bring back Michelle Monaghan. And it's like, oh, cool, great, that's awesome.
Okay, so did you think that the nuclear bomb went off?
Oh, at the end of the movie?
Yeah, the way they edited it, I was like, because it's like they cut the wire, they cut to white, they cut to Ethan Hunt, and he's looking at...
Oh, and then it's like the sunset?
It's like the sunrise or sunset. But at first, you're just like, giant orange glow, cut the wire just then, and then they went to white. Holy crap, they just killed everybody. That's what it was going through my head.
I 100% did.
Okay.
And when they cut, like, in my head the whole time, I was like, when they cut to white, I'm like, oh, haha, funny. Like, yeah, they wouldn't do that. But it's the scene where it's like the sunset and it's that glow.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh gosh, they really did it.
I thought they did. I thought they just killed everybody. And I was like, yeah. Whoa, respect. Respect.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how far away Tom Cruise was, but you have to somewhat believe that he's like far enough away to where he may be fine if it had gone off. And so it's like, wow, maybe they did kill off like all of the side characters and it's just Tom Cruise now.
Yeah. I thought that for a second, but then they revealed that they did it. And I was like, oh, okay, good. I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah. I wasn't ready to see Simon Pegg leave. I love Simon Pegg way too much.
Yeah, he's fantastic in these. So one thing that I thought in the middle of watching this, and we've kind of talked about this, of like the plot is kind of forgettable, but like halfway through the movie, I was like, did I see Mission Impossible 5? Because there's a lot of characters and stuff that like people are talking about that I just don't remember.
Was it when Rebecca Ferguson or when they started talking about Sean Harris's character?
Yeah, that, and like there was just a few other things where I was just like, I don't remember that, but they're acting as if I should. But I did see Mission Impossible 5. What did you think about the White Widow character?
She was fine. It was like,
I feel like there was a better way to do that.
Yes. Part of what's weaved into her character is like, they're in that bathroom to get to her character. They're in that car chase stuff because of results of things that have happened with her character. So it's like, I get that she's kind of a linchpin for those two scenes, but I think that there's probably a more clever way. I don't have anything off the top of my head right now, but there's probably, I agree with you, there's probably a better way to have done, to have gotten to the same places and done those same action scenes, but with a tighter, like, cause I that whole middle part right there kind of slouched a little bit.
Well, it's like they could have just done like the Asian guy instead of having the key to get in or something. Like he just has the information on his phone. They get his phone, and then they find out where Lane is going to be. He's going to be in that transport thing. Well, we got to get him out of this transport. That's our only time to do it. They get him out of that, and then we're done. We don't need that White Widow character anymore. But, like,
okay,
I get, it was interesting. It was different. Like, it was kind of James Bond-y cool, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like you had, like, and that was the weird part, was, like, there's three somewhat romantic plot lines for Ethan Hunt in this movie when it's really been like he's like he loves Michelle Monaghan's character, like he loves her. And even in the last movie, like I'll go ahead and say this, the reason why I remembered the last movie, it was because Rebecca Ferguson was one of my favorite parts from that movie. I think that was the first movie I'd seen her and I was like, she is going to be a huge star, because she was just, it was so great to see somebody hold their own against Tom Cruise in that movie. Like, she completely could stand on the other side and be, like, a perfect counterpart. That was, I thought she was a great part of that movie. And that was one of my favorite movies of the year it came out. That being said, I feel like the romances that they were trying to go for between Tom Cruise and the White Widow and Tom Cruise and Ilsa's character and then Tom Cruise and Michelle Monaghan's character, it was all like, okay, I don't need the romance into this. Like, this, like, love triangle weird thing that's going on. It's like, I kind of loved that he was like, he loved his wife so much, and like that still comes through, I guess, but it was more like diluted.
Yeah,
because of everything else.
Yeah, also she looks a lot like his wife's character.
Rebecca Ferguson or White Widow?
Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah,
so I don't know, I thought she does a fantastic job. For some reason, she wasn't memorable to me. And I like was like, who is that person? And then they were like, it's Elsa. And I was like, who's that?
the person next to you is like, she was in the last movie.
Yeah, I was like, I'm pretty sure I saw the last movie.
All right. So if you're ranking the Mission Impossible films, I know you haven't seen the first one. Where does this like sit? Like, give me a quick rundown two through six.
Okay. I'll include number one in my list just because I don't know. So for me, top to bottom, it goes 6, 3, 5, 4, 1, 2. Haven't even seen one. Can't be worse than the second one.
Okay. I feel like mine's, I'm 5, 6, 4, 3, 1, 2. Like, I think these films have kind of consistently gotten better. And I like 5 quite a bit, so it's kind of unfair for me to put it up next to 6. Because I was just so blown away by that film when they did it. And it's not like 5 has a big lead over 6. It's like 1%. Like, it's just probably like a personal preference type thing. So, all right, let's get to our final thoughts and ratings for Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah, I mean, this is why the summer blockbuster exists, you know? These kind of movies, like fun, big, action, stunts, like just crazy stuff that you can't see anywhere else. Tom Cruise just freaks and he just brings it. This is like the character he was born to play. He does it so well. And like you said, I mean, every single one of these has gotten better. And he's 56. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
But like all of that aside, this is just a really fun movie. And cinematography is fantastic. Like on a technical perspective, really nothing to complain about here at all. This is an A. This is an A for me. I had a lot of fun with it. Of course, there's plot holes. It's a Mission Impossible movie. Like, if you dissect it too much, it's like, oh, well, you know, he probably would have fallen out of the helicopter there. Yeah, no crap. Like, it's a movie. yeah, this is just a ton of fun. It's an A.
Yeah. When you said something about the technical, I instantly was like, I wonder who is the cinematographer on this. The cinematographer on this is Alex Garland's cinematographer, who was a cinematographer on Annihilation and X-Men.
Rob Hardy. He is fantastic.
Rob Hardy, yeah. Yeah, great job, Rob Hardy. This is an A for me. I love this movie. Like, beginning to front, I was entertained. I had a fun time. I walked out, like, feeling good. I was like, this is the type of movie that it's like, I go see it, and I'm like, wow, that was fun. That was a good part of my day. It wasn't like I walk out of it, and I'm like, ugh, garbage, filth, like, so heavy. Like, this is what movies should be. Like, at least big budget ones. I'm not saying, like, small indie films, try and be this. No. Big budget films. Use your budget to do insane things like this that we couldn't see anywhere else. Like, there are things in this movie that it's like I've never seen before, and it's mind-blowing because they simply just use their budget to its full effect. So, I'm an A. If you want to pop one of these out every 2 years, I will gladly pay my $10 and be in the theater opening weekend.
I'm 100% with you, man. Absolutely.
That's all we have for a review of Mission Impossible Fallout. Let's go ahead and get to content of the week. Jake, what is your content of the week?
Yeah, so I mentioned, I believe, last week, maybe a week before, I don't remember, time is a flat circle, that I got a library card recently, and I've been checking out all the books. It's been awesome. But Trevor actually turned me on to a few graphic novels, and I've been reading the Hawkeye series, written by Matt Fraction, his run on the character, and it is truly fantastic. I would highly recommend that series, graphic novels as a whole.
It's also beautiful in addition to being great.
Really, really well told, really well drawn. The artwork is really cool. I feel like I'm in Trevor's world right now, and I apologize for kind of stealing a recommend from you, Trevor.
No problem.
But yeah, the new Hawkeye series, I've really been enjoying it. I've read the first two volumes of, I believe, a 5-volume run. So would highly recommend that series and just graphic novels in general. It's a fantastic art form that I'm excited to kind of be stepping into. So that's mine. Trevor.
I highly recommend the music stylings of Sturgill Simpson. If you are not familiar, I've just been listening to him a lot lately. The best that I can describe it is that it's psychedelic country music.
Ooh.
And
he's like our generation's Willie Nelson.
Yeah. It's just a different kind of thing. He's got, two great albums, or he's got three albums. I'm not as familiar with his first, but, he's got Metamodern Sounds and Country Music and A Sailor's Guide to Earth. He's got a great voice. He just does something a little bit different than most people. I will go on record as saying that country music stopped being good in like 1983, But Sturgill Simpson is a exception to that rule.
Chris Stapleton too. He's kind of in that realm of Sturgill Simpson.
Yeah, and I know Cam and I have talked about Jason Isbell. If you like that kind of thing, you'll probably be on the Sturgill Simpson train as well.
Yeah.
So my other thing is I didn't see Mission Impossible Fallout, as I said, but in honor of Tom Cruise and him becoming an honorable mensch, I want to recommend his entire film library, which I dare say might top to bottom be the highest quality overall film library of any actor.
Wow.
Mm. It's had like more than 15 or 20 movies.
I think you need to save that for a hot take.
That caveat of over 15, 20 movies, though, that's a caveat that not many people meet. So I agree with you.
But I mean, a lot of people are in 15 movies.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Right.
I would say that there are people
consistently is in just good movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He hasn't been in a lot of terrible movies. I'll give you that. Tom Cruise. He's a mensch.
Have you seen Oblivion?
So anyway,
I liked Oblivion.
I've not seen Oblivion.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
A couple if you need a little guidance, a couple of more my favorite more obscure ones are Days of Thunder, as I mentioned, and Vanilla Sky, which are two completely different films but also good for very different reasons.
We also didn't talk about Minority Report either when we inducted him.
So great. Good.
A great film. Also the iconic Risky Business, the you know, dancing in the underwear scene, that whole thing.
The Outsiders.
Oh, Top Gun.
That's right.
Top Gun. Oh, yeah, the Top Gun.
That's what he was
Top
in.
Gun. See, I didn't even like cheat on the Tom Cruise discussion by bringing up my favorite movie of all time, Top Gun.
Well, I think that anytime we bring up Top Gun from now on, it just needs to be mandatory that if it gets said, the Quentin Tarantino 2-minute rant on Top Gun has to be played. It's just mandatory.
The greatest movie script of all time.
Yeah, greatest movie script of all time. Okay, I have two recommends, technically three, two categories. If you liked the stunts and the like real interactions within Mission Impossible Fallout, and you like the action element of it, I would recommend The Raid and The Raid 2. They are two of the greatest action films to come out in the past 10 years, and it's all real actors, not stuntmen, doing real action scenes, real fight scenes, and it's incredible. I will give a warning and say they're incredibly violent, and so if that's not your cup of tea, maybe don't go see them. But if you like spy movies that feature Henry Cavill, a very specific category, I would recommend The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is a movie that came out a couple years ago with him and Armie Hammer.
Is that good?
Yeah, it's very good.
I've never heard anyone talk about that.
So underrated.
It's bright. It's colorful. It's Guy Ritchie, which if you like Guy Ritchie's style, if I'm being 100% honest, Guy Ritchie hasn't done a lot of bad things. We give him a lot of crap on this podcast because he did King Arthur: Legend of the Sword. But if you look at his filmography, other than that, he's been pretty consistently great.
Also, Man from U.N.C.L.E. is like very similar to Mission Impossible Fallout. Now that I'm thinking about it, so.
Yeah, very fun, and it's just a blast to watch Henry. Like, I like Henry Cavill a lot, and even after watching Mission Impossible Fallout, I like him even more, which makes it a bummer when he is Superman, because it's like, wow, Warner Brothers, you're totally missing a great opportunity. But his chemistry with Armie Hammer in Man from U.N.C.L.E. is fantastic. Like, that's one of the best parts of the movie, and Alicia Vikander is in that movie too.
Well, there you go.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, well worth your time. I think it's on one of those like FX, TNT, TBS things constantly. I can't remember which one.
So, Trevor, your question has been answered. FX does have the movies.
They do. Yes. No.
That's true. I had heard that. I just wanted to make sure they still did.
But at the same time, TNT knows drama. All right. Well, that's all we have for this week's episode. We'll be back next week with a new episode of something new. We don't know what. Maybe we'll see Christopher Robin.
Wait. Eighth Grade is playing in Waco.
We will be reviewing Eighth Grade. There we go.
So I just found out.
Or Jake, do you want us to wait for Eighth Grade?
No, it's fine. I'll go see it with my AMC Stubbs membership.
Yeah, rub it in. If you've enjoyed listening to us, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review us, share us with your friends and family. It's really the best way to help us grow and let us, you know, show your appreciation for this podcast, because we love doing this and we'd like to get it out to as many people as possible. If you want to know more about us, you can go to our website at Popcorn Optional, where you can find all of our episodes. If you want to interact with us, you can go find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional, or go like us on Facebook at Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Slanina. You can find me online at 321 Cammy Time. Jake, where can we find you online?
JakeBrown.tv. That's both my website and my Instagram handle. Trevor?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Until next time, we hope you guys have a great week. Watch some movies, and in the words of the great Michael Scott, we'll be back ASAP as possible.
Bye.
Y'all be good.
Cool. All right, Trevor.
Friends, send me. Go be sad that I haven't seen.
Trevor, just go see it. Just go see it right now.
Yeah, go see it right now.
Go see it.